Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner with them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and we're coming to you live today from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen every Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, I am joined by Ashley English, blogger, author, homesteader, and awesome woman. And the entire family is here today. So I want to preface our interview by saying if you hear the sound of a child, it is a legitimate child and not just a very short person who's joined us for the interview. So welcome, Ashley, Huxley, and Glenn. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us. Travel as a tribe. So,
well, I'm so glad you're here today. Ashley and her family live in North Carolina, and she has been writing for me for what feels like ages now, and you have been writing amazing books on homesteading and green living. And today we're going to talk about green living and the way it affects everything from food to DIY to design. But I want to start off by talking a little bit about sort of your backstory, how you got to do what you do. Namely, I want to know if you grew up in the forest the way that you live now, because Ashley lives on an incredible plot of land outside of Asheville, North Carolina, where you do everything from keeping bees, doing your own dairy. You homestead with a capital H. Is that how you grew up?
No, it's funny. Not that way at all. I did fortunately have a maternal grandmother who had a farm. She had a pick-your-own blueberry farm in Chesapeake, Virginia, which is near where you're from. And she was the first person that I saw do any sort of homesteading endeavors at all. She had chickens, she had a huge garden, she canned, and all of that, witnessing all of that when I was a kid, what, you know, during those formative years, left this huge impression on me. But I grew up with my mom. We lived all over the Southeast United States, and I had a very conventional suburban upbringing. But those seeds planted so early, they stuck with me.
So how did you make the transition from going to college and then moving into a more sort of rural lifestyle? When did that change happen?
It happened a few years ago. It's interesting. I have degrees in both nutrition and in sociology, and I thought my career path would ultimately take me to work with a master's degree with child nutrition, specifically low-income child nutrition. And I started pursuing that career path, and it just didn't quite pan out the way I thought it would. And then I took a job at a natural doctor's office in Asheville. I was a medical assistant and a nutrition consultant. And I knew that one day I wasn't going to suddenly walk in and like be the doctor or be the nurse. There was a ceiling and I could only go so far. And I started considering other options. And the serendipity is insane. Literally a week before I quit, I'd given a month's notice, I got an email from a very close friend who's also a senior editor at Lark Books in Asheville. And she said, look, I know you're going to quit your job. And I was just going to take this big leap of faith. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was going to walk away from my job. And my friend and editor, Nicole, said, we've been tossing around this idea for this homesteading book series. You're doing those things, or I know you're going to, like, you know, eventually get bees and whatnot. Do you want to write it? I was like, that's it. That's what I'm doing. And it just, the timing was remarkable, and it's kind of been like that ever since.
I think that's the really nice thing about you. I'll be honest, as someone who sort of lives in a city and is a little bit intimidated by homesteading as sort of an overall movement, it's gotten kind of hipsterized, at least here in Brooklyn, and it tends to be that it seems cool to do those things, but I don't know if anybody does them with any sincerity. And you do them in a way that everything from the clothes you wear to the food you eat, like, you really are on top of where all that comes from, and you try to be involved in the production of that as much as possible. But I love that when you share advice, you share it with this sort of genuine enthusiasm that's not preachy, that's not like you have to change your entire life to do this. Yes. It's very much like make small changes.
Exactly.
And that was the birth of your blog, Small Measure.
Exactly. Small Measure and Small Measures on Design Sponge, they're all about small things that you can do. It can seem absolutely overwhelming to yes. think in its totality of these like massive lifestyle changes, or I got to get solar panels on my roof and I got to get a hybrid car, or I'm not legitimately living this conscientious lifestyle. And I don't buy into that. I also don't buy into, you know, Glenn and I were talking earlier, there's so much reproach and kind of elitist behavior that mm-hmm. often evidences itself in green living. And we believe in a compassionate kind of carrots over sticks approach mm-hmm. where I think if you give people the opportunity and the information and the resources and an open, friendly, accommodating approach, that they kind of tend to move in that direction themselves anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely what happened with me. I was in the ninth grade. I remember being in high school. There was this girl and I thought she was cool. She wore flannel before it was popular, you know, she had the long hair, and she was a president of the environmental club. And I was like, I want to be just like Alana. She's so cool. And that just dove into getting interested in recycling and Greenpeace. And it just has snowballed over, you know, it took time. That's another thing too. Mm-hmm. Like it takes time to get to have an entire lifestyle approach. But with small measures, with the blog and with the things that I share on Design Sponge, there are things that you can start today. And that's mm-hmm. really important to get people excited and enthusiastic.
Well, another thing I love is that you've always really been focusing on sharing ideas that don't, or they have very little to do with income, and they're not so much changes right. that have to be sort of whole hog and things that you have to have a huge yeah. income to do. And do you think that that comes from your background with nutrition for low-income families? Like, definitely. Is that something you've always kept in mind?
I've always kept that in mind. And I lived in Washington, D.C. for 4 years in my early 20s and worked for some nonprofit organizations that did campaigns for social justice and advocacy. And I worked with a lot of low income people. And I think that that can be, I also worked at the same time at a Whole Foods store in Northern Virginia before I shifted to work at a natural, small little mom and pop natural food store in the district. And that divide, I didn't want that to be what kept people from having access to good nutritious food or just other small healthy lifestyle factors that people can make and be conscientious about where they live and how they do things. So that absolutely played into it.
So I want to talk about the books. The books yes. have been incredible. And I love Thank that you. They came about in this incredibly organic way yeah. and not this manufactured, like, I'm going to take over the world. I'm the green Martha Stewart.
Right. Although I don't mind that.
Yeah. I think you're growing into that role pretty naturally. But let's talk about the first one and talk about the whole series of four, because you've written books about canning and about your own dairy and about bees. And let's sort of talk about it from the
right.
beginning.
So the Homemade Living series so far has four titles. Like you mentioned, there's Keeping Bees, Home Dairy, Canning and Preserving, and Keeping Chickens. And I have ideas for like 10 more. I love it to be a library of books. And they're primers. They're with the beginner mindset. You know, Glenn and I often chat about so many times people who are totally entrenched in a particular discipline, they lose that beginner's mindset. Mm-hmm. So I wanted there to be a lot of hand-holding, a lot of you can do this kind of approach, but that didn't insult the skill level of people who are perhaps a little bit more mm-hmm. advanced in those things. So that's the way that that series has been authored. I also just had a new book come out in August called A Year of Pies. And it's, you know, I've been baking.
It's delicious.
The first thing I ever baked, and I've actually baked professionally, I baked commercially, but the first thing I ever baked, I was 8 years old, and it was a pie. It was a pecan pie. And again, it left this, you know, huge imprint on me. And I've been baking ever since. And this book capitalizes on my interest and passion for it, the interest in seasonality and local foods, which is how Glenn and I cook. You can Huxley's tap dance.
It's just some homemade background music.
And all of that to have this entire calendar year to show you can do this, you know, sweet and savory pies all year round. And now we're working on a sixth book right now. My manuscript is due December 1st. I'm working with a different publisher, Roost Books, and it's called Handmade Gatherings. And it's basically kind of like Etsy meets kinfolk is how someone described mm-hmm. it. It's like seasonal, collaborative, entertaining, where the decorating, the crafting, the food, everything, everyone does together. And it's really fun.
I love that you've always had a really huge sort of community, a yes, communal aspect absolutely. To these things. I remember when you were doing the canning book and you were talking about having canning parties and you right. wrote a post about that on Design Sponge. And I remember somebody saying, how come nobody does that in New York? Like, why don't we have parties where people do these things that maybe seem daunting to do on your own
right.
and in a way that allows you to maybe order a set of jars? Sort of, was that always a factor? Was thinking communally?
Or? It's interesting. When I started authoring the Homemade Living series, I had to do a lot of research on different people already engaged in these disciplines. And I found that food is like the great democratic unifier. It crosses all divides, race, gender, socioeconomic, political status. And getting involved, especially in like the beekeeping club in my area, I met so many people that I would otherwise never rub shoulders with who had a wealth of information. And I thought, this is it. You know, people need to be connecting and not reinventing the wheel every time. There's people who can help you out. And then you can do like, you know, the basic food version of a barn raising where you're all canning things together and working, you know, on building a chicken coop together. Or I just extracted honey with some of my friends last weekend, and many hands made for light work. And yeah, community is a huge, huge area of importance to
I'm really glad you mentioned the sort of apolitical nature of it, because the interesting thing I think about the thread that runs through all of the homesteading that you've been writing about and sort of promoting is that it really does kind of bring people together who maybe previously would not have spent time together, because those are activities that are sort of essential for taking care of yourself if you're living sort of outside of a major metropolitan area where you may have to provide these things for yourself. Have you made sort of new connections with people that maybe wouldn't share the same typical political or like social views that
absolutely I mean, and it's interesting because there's a lot of areas of conversation that we don't talk about for all of the small bit that we do. In my own community, I found amazing connections that way, and people who I can't imagine not having in my life now. But I think in a city, it's the same approach, you know. Like I said, food is this amazing unifier, and whether you're providing for your pantry for the entire winter, or you're just making some cool pickles because that's what people are doing and it's fun, you're gonna encounter people that you might never otherwise interact with.
What do you mean, the fact that you said pickles, I can't not ask about sort of the pickle that thing from Portlandia. What do you think about the sort of hipsterification of that movement? Does it bother you? Is it funny?
Like, we love Portlandia. We think it's absolutely spot on and hilarious. It's actually a lot like Asheville too. I actually made a post on the blog today. I'm teaching a canning class this weekend, and I called it, I think, like, we put things in jars.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. You know, where we live a mile down a dirt road on 11 acres and like in a forested cove, and it's remote. But everyone around me, like the old timers, people have lived there a long time. Everybody has a garden. Everybody cans. So it's not hip. It's what has always been done. But I think it's fantastic. Any kind of things that people can do. You know, Williams-Sonoma came out with a line last year called Agrarian last spring. And there were a lot of people that were kind of poo-pooing it because they're a large company. And I thought, this is fantastic. If people with deep pockets want to get involved in small-scale homesteading, I applaud it, because it really is this wonderful slippery slope. I have found personally, and for other people, you take one small step and it just snowballs and you get more interested. I think that being involved in the natural environment has a tendency to make you want to be a steward of it, which is what I applaud and am a huge advocate and proponent of. That's what my body of work is all about. So I say, you know, do it.
What do you think? I mean, if we're discussing sort of Portlandia, and I think there are a lot of people for whom homesteading will be kind of like a flavor of the month activity. What do you think is the hook that's going to get people to stay? Maybe who got into it for those sort of cool kid reasons? What do you think will keep people?
Maybe just the community of other people that you're going to encounter. It's fascinating. Some of the, especially I keep coming back to the beekeepers, there are people that I have met who have, they're just bodies of knowledge, and you're going to return to them. But maybe if that's not even it, maybe you just meet people of the same demographic. There is something about getting tactile with your food that for a lot of people, it's not like chia pets or, you know, pet pigs in the 80s where those are total trends. I don't see what's happening now in the homesteading movement as a trend. I see it as an entire lifestyle shift, and it's not just domestic. This is an international trend, and I think it's only going to continue to grow. So make some mozzarella cheese. That's what I'd say. Make your own mozzarella cheese.
Start with cheese.
Exactly. Start with cheese. And it's amazing. People, it's like, you know, the Pandora's box. I made mozzarella cheese. Oh my God. Now I'm going to try to make my own bread. I'm going to keep chickens. It's funny how mozzarella cheese is like the gateway drug into homesteading.
She's never heard anybody
else. That's right.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and maybe we'll talk about some more cheese.
Sounds good.
Today's featured book is Flowers by Carolyn Rome. It has been more than a decade since Carolyn Rome first shared her love of gardening and flower arranging. Now, for the first time ever, she turns her own photographic lens to that passion with flowers, showcasing more than 300 images of the varieties in her abundant gardens, all captured at the most vibrant and exquisite moments throughout the season. With a gardener's intimate understanding and a designer's elegant eye, Rome shows us the flowers she has cultivated for decades in and around Weatherstone, her historic Connecticut home. While alternating dramatic close-ups with portraits of lovely arrangements and sweeping views of her land, Rome writes with wit, emotion, and affection of what flowers have meant to her, as well as the joys and travails of the committed gardener's life. What began as a casual hobby ultimately became a multi-year endeavor, as Rome used her camera to explore the special relationship a gardener enjoys with her carefully nurtured beauties. The outcome is a remarkably personal visual essay, sumptuous, surprising, and as revealing of the sensibility behind the camera as the magnificent species that stand before it. This beautiful flower garden in a book is Carolyn Rome's most significant and singular volume yet. Flowers by Carolyn Rome is $85 and available wherever books are sold.
Hey, welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm speaking with Ashley English, author of the Handmade Living series from Lark Books, several upcoming books, the blog Small Measure, and the column Small Measures on Design Sponge. So before the break, we were talking about homesteading as sort of discussing the food and sort of lifestyle end of it. I really would love to talk about the way that sort of green living and homesteading, which you're a huge part of, has affected sort of design and home goods as well, because that's clearly where we overlap with the column at Design Sponge. But during the break, we were talking about the way this has popped up in the terms of CSA fibers and things like that. How have you seen that spread into the design and sort of DIY community unrelated to food?
Unrelated to food. I don't remember if I actually saw it on Design Sponge or if I saw it through some other means. In Habitat, Treehugger, those are great websites for regularly posting things on environmental decor and design. But I remember seeing there was a profile of someone here in Brooklyn who's using, you know, appropriated wood that comes from buildings that are being refurbished to make really beautiful furniture. That's a huge trend. I mean, you're seeing it in bars and restaurants and cafes and this repurposing, recycling, upcycling. And I think that that's just another, the entire DIY movement as a whole, I think that it's all variations of the same theme, you know, whether you're talking about handcrafted food or animal husbandry or building your own, you know, wall of repurposed barn wood in your home or bar. I think that that's a trend. Again, I really feel like it's a lifestyle shift on a lot of levels that's kind of permeating the entire subconsciousness right now in design.
I think it's really become, I think you're right about the full term or the sort of full scale shift, especially for design, because I feel when you were talking about repurposed barn wood, I feel like if you knew the amount of times a day I hear that phrase in a press release, I feel like repurposed wood has become, is like the new black. Like
everyone's
using it. You're assumed that you're going to use it. If you're not using repurposed wood, people look at you like, are you crazy? Like, of course you should use repurposed wood. And so I feel like it's become, it's like old hat now, and you assume everyone's going to be working with those materials. And so what do you think the new level of green is? Like, do you think that's going to become a new standard? Or
I think it might become the new standard. I mean, we're staying at a chain hotel here while during our time up here, and the complimentary breakfast this morning had compostable utensils, compostable plates.
Yeah.
And this wasn't like a boutique hotel or anything like that. We got some takeout Chinese delivered to the room last night because we had the baby and it's tricky to go out. And it was from this local green purveyor of Chinese food, and it wasn't expensive or anything. And granted, we're in Brooklyn, but this is definitely the norm in Asheville as well. And I've driven across the country 4 times. I love to travel by car. And I'm shocked at all the places that I've seen along the way where it's just starting to make, I mean, granted, there are many places where it's not even remotely part of the landscape. But I think interest and conscientiousness in design is really starting to evidence itself in so many different ways that are unexpected. We were just, you know, watching some morning talk show this morning, and the actress Rachel Bilson was on, and she herself was just talking about glamping and how she's like, oh, that camp. And I think that glamping can kind of do it too. You know, you start with like luxurious camping and then you're like, hey, being in the natural world, it's kind of a nice thing. And the fact that glamping exists as an option for people who have the means to go to Tahiti or Bora Bora, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, the fact that that is even an option now, I think it's just the zeitgeist. It's happening. People are interested in and a reconnection with the natural world.
What do you think that is that's making that sort of a universal thing, though? Because for me, it doesn't seem surprising that it's happening in America right now, because I feel like Americans in particular are incredibly divorced from the natural landscape, especially if you're living sure. in a somewhat urban area. But to me, I feel like when I've traveled abroad, people seem far more connected to where their food comes right. from, the land that they're living on. Why do you think it's sort of popping up worldwide now, is not just in the States?
Well, the internet. Everything travels so quickly. But I also do think, you know, when we honeymooned, we went to Paris for a few days and we took a train to Monaco and then we went down to Rome for a few days. And the density there, we have like this vast country where things are so spread out, and we have kind of, in a sense, it's like our own undoing, while it's a blessing too. We have this vast terrain to kind of decimate and sprawl out on and do whatever we want. That's not the case in Europe. Population density there forces you to be aware of the food. You take a train right outside of Paris or a bus right outside of London, that's where the food is growing, right there. So you're very, very close to it. And they have train systems and infrastructure that's just lacking here. But, you know, a lot of the time what happens in Europe moves this way as well. So it, you know, could just be a continuation of our interest in all things European.
That's definitely true. I would love to really talk about what feedback you've gotten from readers, both online and from people that you've met who've read your books. What sort of response are you getting to this idea of an overall sort of lifestyle change? Does it differ by region, or is it sort of a universal response you've gotten so far?
It's been universal. It's interesting. One of the things that you learn when you get involved in publishing, whether it's a blog or books, is that there, it seems so obvious, but perhaps not unless you're behind the screen, so to speak, or behind the book, is they're highly curatorial. So I've had people write me and say, you're my heroine, you know, I dream of being like you. And I'll write them back and say, I'm gonna keep it real, right now I'm in my pajamas. I've been in my pajamas all day. The cat just barfed on the floor, you know, like, I am not gonna can anything for a couple months because I'm too busy. You know, we just bought some butter, it's okay that I didn't whip it myself. So just to try and keep it very real. And I think that people really, really relate to that, because if you think about, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, doing this in its totality is completely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. That's why I advocate small incremental steps and small gestures. But yeah, the feedback has been, everybody's interested in it. It's remarkable that, you know, I get readers from all over the world. And, you know, of course, on Design Sponge, with such an international readership as well, people are totally fascinated by this.
What do you think is sort of the biggest question you get from people, or the biggest concern? Is there any sort of thing that pops up a lot?
People say, how do you do it all? And admittedly, I have a spouse who works from home, who is the man behind the curtain. He's amazing. And now with our son, he's like daddy daycare. He's a rock star. But I don't do it all. Again, tapping into that notion of community. Mm-hmm. When I need to extract honey from my bees and I've got book deadlines and writing deadlines, I tap my community of friends. When I have picked a whole bunch of apples from my mom's apple tree and they're sitting on my dining room table and I'm like, oh crap, they're all gonna rot before I can make apple butter, I call out my friends, you know, I ask for help. And I think that that notion of being like the queen bee or the head honcho who can do it all or have minions that no one talks about, I don't buy into that. Mm-hmm. I think that you should get to know the people around you, and that just in itself engenders the willingness to cooperate, because it's reciprocal. If you ask for help, people are going to ask it of you, and it just builds community.
How has having a child changed the way that you... How hasn't it changed the way that...
It's remarkable. When I started writing A Year of Pies when Huxley was 3 months old and finished it when he was 9, and he was in, you know, the baby carrier at times while I was rolling out pastry dough. It's challenging. You have no idea what little time hogs children are on the best possible level. You know, they're the hardest work and the biggest reward. You just have to get really creative with time management. And, you know, now that he's going to be 2 at the end of the month, He wants to be outside all the time and he wants to play. And so Glenn and I are just always in this dance, you know, and it's amazing how you become like a ninja of time management when they're taking a nap or they go to bed. You can do in 15 minutes what would have taken you 5 hours mm-hmm. by virtue of necessity.
I feel like any large project really teaches you how yes. to even be stronger and more efficient than you ever thought you could be.
Yeah, without question.
And I'm sure the child is the biggest possible version of that.
The biggest project management there is.
So, I mean, in terms of having a child now, are there ways that you've had to sort of compromise a little bit, or have you found that having sort of this new person to teach about the world has made you even more sort of devoted to the cause, so to speak?
Oh, without question. And you get to seek out avenues and areas that you never even thought about before. I was talking to Glenn earlier. I think everything Huxley has on today was either given to us, or I found an online consignment store called ThreadUp that's based out of San Francisco that is amazing. The prices are fantastic. Everything is in really good condition. And you can get, you know, kids are always getting things messed up and they go through clothes so quickly that I didn't even know about that, about kids' consignment. And so I'm starting to explore a lot of other green, you know, environmental sustainable living arenas that I didn't even know about before, which is fantastic. And then just networking with other moms in Asheville. I'm part of a Yahoo group called Asheville Mamas, and we share information and products and things all of the time. It's an incredible resource. So interacting in that way is like a whole nother level of community and sustainable living that I hadn't even explored before.
All right. I'm going to ask you one embarrassing question. I'm going to totally put you on the spot. I want to know what the one guilty pleasure you have that is not a green thing. Because I feel like I look at you as the Martha Stewart of green. And I sit here and think about like everything I'm wearing came from the store. Everything I ate came from the store. I feel like a terrible person.
Well, I don't judge.
No, oh my God. I never feel judged, some reality, but I'm dying to know.
Reality TV
Please
shows.
Tell me. Oh, okay. Which one?
Oh my gosh. Well, I love The Bachelorette. Oh my God.
That
can't
is
get enough
a great
of it.
Unifier. Everyone I feel like I've ever talked to is like, I love The Bachelorette.
Glenn loves it. It's like it was like our Monday night date night. We would watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, or now The Amazing Race is on and The Fabulous Beekman Boys are on it. And I'm all about that. But in truth, I mean, we don't have the time to watch much TV, but that is without question my guilty pleasure. Yeah. And probably at Halloween, I might have a Snickers bar.
You might. Oh, you're terrible, Ashley. You're so terrible. I believe, and just for the record, you shared a recipe for homemade Reese's Cups.
Yeah,
on
I think it was my most popular post ever.
I believe my mom called me and said, does anybody actually make those when you could just buy them at the store? And I was like, Ashley does. And I'm sure they're delicious. So before we go, tell us about what you've got going on this weekend and what's coming up.
Well, we're actually in town for Whole Foods has an online magazine called Dark Rye, where they make videos about people that they think are doing interesting things in the world of sustainability. And they flew me up here and they're putting us up in the hotel, and we're going to a dinner tonight at Flatbush Farm, which I'm really excited about. And then we actually fly home tomorrow. This Friday, I'm throwing a party at an apple orchard for my new book. And Saturday, I'm teaching a canning class. Sunday, we're going to a birthday party for 2 kids. It never stops. We just keep the train going.
It never ends. And when are your new books coming out?
The Handmade Gatherings won't be out actually until the spring of 2014. But A Year of Pies just came out in August. So I love to write. I love to blog. I love working with you. And yeah, we just keep cranking them out. It's fun.
I'm so glad you were here to talk today. For any of you who aren't familiar with Ashley's work, you can check out all of her books at bookstores everywhere and online. You can visit her blog at smallmeasures.blogspot.com.
It's actually just smallmeasure.com now.
Sweet.
I bought a domain.
Oh, that's always the greatest feeling to make that move from
wonderful.
Blogspot to .com. smallmeasure.com. And you can read her column on Design Sponge every Friday. It's called Small Measures, and she shares great ideas for living a greener life. So thanks so much to the whole family
for
being here. And have a great weekend. And thanks to all of you for listening.
Thank you, Grace.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.